This is Ozarks at Large. The founder of WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, is under arrest as of yesterday. It's the latest development in the ongoing saga of leaked information and the international fallout from the release of diplomatic documents through WikiLeaks. While Assange was arrested for alleged sex crimes and not as a result of the document dump, the release of the documents has many in the press around the world discussing the historical implications of the release. And that means we welcome our history doctor, Bill Smith, back to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to discuss if anything like this has ever happened before. Welcome back, Bill.
Glad to be back, Kyle. You know, this is an intersection in a pair of my professional interests, American diplomatic history and digital media. From the beginning, I've preached to college students and administrators who advise them to take great care in what they post online. Digital assets are extremely portable and last forever is one of those preaching lines in every presentation I make. That's the lesson that should be taken away from this. At the end of the day, what we're really dealing with here is a breach of security at the most basic level, but a classic misunderstanding of what email and digital assets like that do when you leave them behind. It's not a phone call. It's a letter that's immortal.
This week, Richard Cohen in the Washington Post pointed out that transparency was a real problem. His argument was that total transparency produces total opaqueness. If everything's open, no one says anything. He said that's how Dick Cheney and George Bush operated on Iraq. And this is quoting the former Vice President Cheney. I learned early on that if you don't want your memos to get you in trouble someday, just don't write any.
And this is a great example for anyone that has their doctorate in history to do what they yearn for, which is refer back to their dissertation. You know, yeah. Some few opportunities you get to dig out those 12 years of your life, maybe. A big part of what mine happened to be on was reading diplomatic dispatches from the late 30s and the early 1940s. And frankly, what I read during that time and what I see online is really what the difference is here. It's the difference between, as Cohen says, a formal memo. People wrote in their diplomatic dispatches during that period for the assumption that someday somebody they didn't know was going to read it. It was paper. It was going to last forever. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of ways to record details without adding the OMG to what your BFF in the foreign ministry may have gossiped you. I mean, it's embarrassing, but it's not top secret, a lot of the things that have come out. Let's be clear, though. There is a vast difference between the military information, which has come out through some of the earlier flow of WikiLeaks, some of the assumptions of other cables that haven't been released yet that may indeed impact people. You've got tactical assessments that might reveal real human sources and put them in danger. But right now, the gist of what we're seeing are really diplomatic assessments that were perhaps a little too chattily worded.
So is this unprecedented? Is this crippling our diplomatic abilities?
You know, the United States has a long history of both attempting to read other nations' diplomatic information and having its own diplomatic laundry aired publicly. When people talk about WikiLeaks, the Pentagon Papers are a pretty good analogy. This was a top-secret Department of Defense history of the Vietnam conflict, and as such, brought together military information along with diplomatic and political assessments. In a way, the totality of WikiLeaks looking at the current war of terrorism, Iraq, Afghanistan, Iran, other situations in the world, has some similarity. The New York Times used the report to assert that Lyndon Johnson's administration was lying to the American public.
But the Pentagon Papers, the leak was during the Nixon administration, right?
Correct. And another interesting comparison point. Some of the WikiLeaks documents relate to the Bush administration's actions. So why would the current president from the opposite party care? Nixon's Attorney General, John Mitchell, went after the Washington Post and the New York Times in an attempt to prevent them from further publishing excerpts of the Pentagon Papers. The case famously went to the Supreme Court, which found that the government had to meet a very high burden of proof for a prior restraint injunction against the press because of the First Amendment. The thinking by Nixon and his administration became, we have to protect the presidency. No matter how much we enjoy that the leaking of the Pentagon Papers shows that a politician that I didn't particularly have any care for gets embarrassed. Within the Pentagon Papers, Daniel Ellsberg eventually admitted to the leak, but his case was declared a mistrial, in part because the government's illegal wiretapping of him and his psychiatrist as a part of the Watergate fiasco. So the criminal ends up being the person that did the leak, not the media who published it.
All right, so we have WikiLeaks now. We have the Pentagon Papers during the Nixon administration. If I know you, you have some examples of others.
You would have been disappointed
by anything less. Yes, I would.
Almost every era of American history has an episode involving the revelation of diplomatic secrets. It goes all the way back to the Founding Fathers era when French diplomats demanded payment and bribes to continue negotiations, the details of which were revealed by the president himself, John Adams, in what became known as the XYZ affair. The letters represented what we today would call redacted labels of the individual French ministers involved. And this episode also gives us one of the great American history legendary quotes, "Millions for defense, sir, but not one cent for tribute."
All right, so good. Now we have an 18th century example. Anything that may be a little bit closer to our lives?
Well, I can. You know, the Spanish-American War, which is the close of the 1800s into the turn of the 20th century, is impacted by the revelation of the Delhomme letter. It's a classic pre-internet example of some of these released cables. Enrique Dupuy Delhomme was the Spanish ambassador to the United States. He wrote back to the foreign minister of Spain his opinion of the situation in Cuba and gave this assessment of the then American president, William McKinley. I quote from the diplomatic letter.
Okay.
"Weak and catering to the rabble, and besides, a low politician who desires to leave a door open to himself and stand well with the jingoes of his party." Now,
that sounds like it could have been in the WikiLeaks dump, doesn't
it? It does, doesn't it? Yet another one of these. It isn't exactly new. Now, this letter was stolen by Cuban revolutionaries, and they delivered it to the Hearst newspapers. William Randolph Hearst, who had been engaged in some pretty open campaigning to stir up American opinion to get us into a war with Spain over Cuba, was more than happy to print this letter in early February, and a little over 2 months later, the U.S. was at war with Cuba.
So McKinley, President McKinley, declared war just to show that, you know, his manhood?
Well, hardly. Remember the Maine?
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
Some other events? So it's not the worst thing even being said about him during this period. His then Assistant Secretary of the Navy and future U.S. President, Theodore Roosevelt, reputedly said of McKinley to one of his friends, "No more backbone than a chocolate eclair." The difference between the late 19th century American bureaucrat and today's 21st century is that Teddy never put that vent in an email.
Who benefits from this latest incident with WikiLeaks?
I think that's the essential question, and one that relates to each of our examples. There was a newspaper tie to each of these as modern American diplomatic events. Understand that many of these documents were published not only for the public's right to know, but also to increase circulation. Times versus United States, the Supreme Court case, did not provide an unlimited ability to publish classified documents, but it did set the bar high for prior restraint and establish that the First Amendment supports against government action on the press, and that that would trump the legality of publishing the documents. In other words, the Times case pointed out the Times wasn't guilty for having done the printing. Daniel Ellsberg was guilty of the stealing and giving it to them. And in other words, one of the arguments you hear today by many is that they are in possession of stolen goods. Well, the First Amendment in the United States trumps that. So Julian Assange's source is the criminal, that it is published by media entities, at least in the United States under the First Amendment, is not. Let me be clear. Revealing tactical military or covert assets are a different matter. But putting on my other hat, what we're dealing with here isn't a failure to communicate. It's over-communication in a digital medium that almost always is hard to secure. That wasn't a bunch of hackers breaking into government servers. It was a disgruntled employee walking out the door and blowing the whistle.
If you're going to send an email to anybody that criticizes your boss, your colleague, or your neighbor, assume that at some point someone's going to see it.
Digital assets are extremely portable and easy to copy.
And can come back to hang your digital assets in the meantime.
Yes, your digital asset may be in the wind.
That's right. And until the next time the State Department chat room is breached,
we're history.
Bill Smith earned his master's and PhD in history at the University of Arkansas and teaches history at Northwest Arkansas Community College. He talks more about the historical ties to the WikiLeaks story at OzarksAtLarge.com, giving another example of a leaked national diplomatic document and explaining the difference between espionage and treason. That part of the conversation can be heard at our website, OzarksAtLarge.com.